KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. It's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Welcome, everybody. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio once again. It's another Tuesday, and it's another hour for you to waste your life. And my name is Ara, and Alon's not here, but we have our new intern.
Colin.
What's up, Colin? How are you doing tonight?
Pretty good. How are you?
All right. We've got tons of stuff, as usual, and maybe this time, if Alon isn't here and listening, we can cover it all.
We actually have stuff planned to talk about.
Snicker, snicker. Okay, so Alon's not here. He is, I don't know what he's doing. Do you know what he's doing?
He's at a wedding, I think.
Okay, we'll use that excuse, sure. Okay, so he got kidnapped again, and he's in some wedding, and so that's what that is. Okay, so the way we used to do the show a while back was we used to always open up with what have we been playing lately, right? So we're going to bring that back. So I'm going to ask you, Colin. Hey, Colin, what have you been playing lately?
Well, I don't know if you've heard, but Steam got released for Mac this week, I believe. And so I got free Portal, because you can get free Portal on Mac till the 24th. And I've been playing on my MacBook. But there's been a big problem, because I have no right click, so it's been like control clicking it. And then
right, because on the Macintosh, they don't think you can coordinate the two finger presses at once.
You know, they had this thing where they invented the mouse, but they never decided to add a second button to it. Is it, like, patented? Why don't they have a second button on a MacBook?
This is, well, yeah, it's funny because it's, I mean, I just made a joke about it, right? A lot of people complain about it. Ironically, I used to be a total Uber Mac guy. And, I mean, like, way back when, like, I mean, I had an Apple IIgs.
Damn.
You ever seen one of those?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, like, totally old school, right?
We had those at my elementary school.
Yeah. And then I graduated to, what was it? Like a Mac 2SI or something. Also very...
no idea what that is. Old.
Yeah, it's like... Yeah, it was way back when they were using like Motorola processors.
Ooh.
Anyway, I very quickly got a four-button mouse, right? So I didn't even bother with the two buttons. And that was really awesome.
Yeah.
But I think the whole deal with that stuff is that they are always going for maximum accessibility. There's a lot of value to an interface where there's only one button to press.
Except for when it comes to games.
Well, yes, you're absolutely right. If a game is designed to be played with, let's say, a mouse and two buttons, then you're at an obvious disadvantage.
Yeah. Well, Portal runs pretty well on it. I'm playing a last gen 2 gigs, 2.3 megahertz processor MacBook, and it runs pretty well. There's some, like, slight technical glitches. Like, for some reason, it started showing up with black instead of actually showing the real Portal through it, and that was a problem. But I guess they just patched that. But I'm going through that, and I also bought Torchlight.
Torchlight, yes. Which, that company, actually, I think just got bought out by some big Chinese company.
It was something like that. Or
yeah, Perfect World.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're making an MMO out of Torchlight that's going to be free-to-play.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I love the game. It's only like $10 on sale right now, and it's just been really fun. Like, just I need something to hold me over till Diablo 3 comes out, and I can get a new computer. So that's been like a great like dungeon crawl to play.
Cool. Yeah, and I only know about Perfect World because I bought stock in them like last year.
Oh, nice.
But well, I don't know how nice it is lately. But yeah, we'll see. That them stocks are funny, right?
So what have you been playing?
So I see that Joe's called. We have a caller, but let's not take him on right now. So, Joe, if you can hang on for a little bit, we'll get to you. Don't go away. So I'm actually pretty jazzed because there's three new really interesting demos of games on Xbox lately, 360. So we've got Split Second, Rocket Knight, and Raystorm HD. Let's talk about Raystorm first. So Raystorm's kind of funny, right? Because this was originally a PlayStation game.
The game looked old.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that because the graphics are super high res now, but you can still tell it's old. Why does it look old, Colin?
It just looks super like all the textures look really blocky and it just doesn't look fun. Well, it looks fun. It just looks like I don't know. Something about it just rubs me the wrong way when I'm looking at
really?
It.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you think you could reach down deep inside
I played PlayStation 1 games. That was like my second console from Nintendo to PlayStation 1, and I had a Game Boy in between. So, like, I love PlayStation 1 games.
Yeah. Well, Rage Storm was one of my favorite shooters. It's a really, really awesome game. It's funny because Rage Storm, right, it's HD, so it's the exact same game. They've just smoothed out all the graphics. So everything is in high res, all the textures are in high res, but in terms of polygons, right, there's no extra geometry. It's the same geometry as before, so that's probably the blocky look you were referring to.
Yeah.
And they've actually also, you know, since they're just drawing on such a bigger size matrix of pixels, it just, like, everything looks like exploded bigger than it actually was
before. Is it fun?
I thought it was really fun, but here's the funny thing, right? I will never buy this game again. I love the game. I mean, part of it has to do with the fact that it's basically $15. But even with the super upgraded graphics, which are, I guess they're not super upgraded, I'll call them normal upgraded. It's just, I mean, I played the game already.
Yeah.
You know, extra graphics isn't enough for me. I'm wondering how well a lot of these remake games do, especially some of the more obscure ones, because, I mean, the big hit ones, right, like, let's say, I don't know, Mega Man, right?
Yeah.
Even though Mega Man, they didn't actually redo graphics, they just made an original game, again, using all the old
Mega Man 9 and 10,
old technology, right?
Yeah.
And those do really well, right? It's kind of a shame, because Rage Storm, nobody knows about Rage Storm. I mean, pretty much. It's like people who use the Dvorak keyboard. Like, there's five of them, okay? So, but it's still really awesome. So, if you guys like shooters, I would highly recommend that.
It looked really hardcore from the trailer that I watched. Like, looked like stuff was going everywhere. It looked like one of those ones where it's like bullet hell, kind of.
The other thing that stuck out in my mind is the demo is almost literally 30 seconds long.
Really?
Yeah, because they let you play the first stage right up until the boss, which is very, very short. And so I was just, you know, flying around, shoot these guys. All of a sudden the screen's fading out, and I'm like, what's this? So, like, okay, fine. Like, you want to give a 30-second demo? Like, sure, why not?
Yeah. All right, so Bullet Knight looked like it was a crazy, like, you're some kind of mongoose or something.
Rocket Knight. So that's the other one we want to talk about. Yes. So Rocket Knight is really interesting because, and you're not a mongoose, you're an opossum, by the way. Or as they say down in the backwoods, possum.
Okay.
This is a remake. This is another remake. It's not really, I wouldn't even call it a remake. I would call it kind of like a re-envisioning or a renewal of a really, really old game called Rocket Knight Adventures, which came out on the Genesis way back when. And it actually spawned a couple of sequels. I think there was a sequel on the Genesis, and then I think that there was another sequel on the Super Nintendo called Sparkster,
ooh,
which is the name of the character.
From what I understood, you fought pigs in the last game, and now you're fighting wolves?
Yeah, that's what it seems like. Yeah, yeah. It's I was actually really impressed by this because, for one, you know, call me a critic, but the developer is Climax,
yeah,
right? Which they don't really have any track record in making games of this kind, which is it's basically a platform action game. With a couple of cool moves. So knowing that about Climax, which, like, we don't know. And also the fact that this is a 2D game using 3D graphics, which developers since time immemorial have effed up continuously. Because it's just very, very difficult to pull that stuff off.
Yeah.
There's, I think, only a very small subset of developers who can really, really do it well. And you run into all kinds of readability issues and just artistic issues and interface issues when you're trying to build a world that's out of polygons, but it's supposed to be read and interpreted as basically a 2D playing game.
Yeah, from what I understood from the video I watched, it kind of had like a cel-shaded look to it, and the way that it seemed really flat. Like, it didn't seem 3D except for some of the effects.
Yeah,
that it was
not so much. I mean, it was hard to tell exactly if what elements, if any, were actually cel-shaded.
Yeah.
But it's definitely, right, 3D graphics, but you play on a 2D slice.
Got it.
So I was really impressed. The mechanics are you know, really, really sharp. There's, I mean, it's responsive. It's easy to control the character. You have a really nice set of moves that you can do that use, you know, the various, they just, I don't know, they just integrate together.
They just mesh really well.
Yeah, very, very nicely. And I was really impressed. Once again, probably not going to buy it, but that's just because I'm really impatient about a lot of things. But at the same time, I was like, hey, you know what? On initial inspection, Climax did a really awesome job with this.
One thing I saw was that there was a there's a platforming segment, and there's also like a flying segment where you can kind of like it's little flying parts.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, they kind of and the original had a lot of that too, right? So you have standard platforming sections, and then you also have these kind of like shooter-esque sections. Also, demo like 5-10 minutes long, right? So it's
you can't get the full package.
It's like 10 to 20 times longer demo than the Raystorm demo. So if you really want some free playtime, you should download this demo and not pay for it.
So in your 5-minute opinion, what works better, the flying segments or the platforming segments? Or are they both pretty much even?
No, I mean, honestly, from what I saw so far, I mean, the flying stuff was pretty standard.
Yeah.
There wasn't really anything there. But you get a really cool dynamic with... You have to manage this, basically. You have this energy meter that... basically you consume by doing certain moves.
Yeah.
And it's really, really interesting to manage that resource and also do the things that you need to do to traverse around the level. So that's really awesome. And they also have this really cool combo counter thing, which it's not a totally novel device, right? But basically anytime you destroy an enemy or pick up some power up or pickup or whatever, that sets a timer which lasts, like, let's say, I don't know, like a second and a half or maybe 2 seconds. And if you either pick something else up or get the enemy, kill the enemy within that time frame, right, this multiplier increments, you get extra points, and it renews. So if you're really, really good, it's like you're playing this really cool meta game of how far can I keep this combo going, right?
Right.
And you have to basically manage... doing these select actions at regular enough intervals so that the time never actually completely expires.
How much is the game, do you know?
So I think it's basically the equivalent of $15. So, hey, you know what? These higher profile,
downloadable games. I would pay $10 for that game. It just seems like $15 is way too much.
Yeah, but you know what the funny thing is that when it comes to Xbox Live games, I don't think the price between whether it was $5 or $15 has ever affected my decision to buy.
Yeah.
Now, I bought maybe 3 or 4 games on Xbox Live, mind you. So, I don't know. Maybe that says something about me.
All right.
Or maybe it doesn't. All right, so there's the music. Joe, thanks for calling. We will get to you when we come back. Everybody, hang on.
Sorry, Joe.
We'll be back in a couple minutes.
Welcome back to Chatterbox Video Game Radio.
All right, and that gentleman and maybe a few ladies was Colin. Thank you for that wonderful intro. And Colin, who's our wonderful sponsor?
UAT, the University of Advancing Technology.
That's right. So you can go to uat.edu to find out all about that, and you can learn about games and all kinds of cool stuff.
And their computer lab is also really awesome.
And yeah, so it's like so awesome that like you should just come to Arizona and check it out, right?
Yes, you should.
Okay, sure. Travel 2,000 miles. Okay, so Joe, we have Joe on the line. Thank you for calling, Joe. Are you there?
Yes, I am. What's up, Ara?
What's happening, Joe? How you doing?
Not too much. Gotta agree with you. Rocket Knight's pretty sweet.
Yes. All right. And you know what is one thing about Rocket Knight also that impressed me is that they really made a different game. They made a new game. They didn't try to like remake the old game. That was.
No, I would agree because I played the first one, which I liked a lot.
Yeah, you know what? The first one, actually, I can't believe I remember this. But remarkably, I remember that I was completely underwhelmed by it. And I hate using that word, but I just did anyway. So, but what do you bring to us, fine sir, tonight?
Well, I bring a little something we talked about briefly when I last talked to you. When I was down there, you were talking about that guy who was suing GameStop over the used game content, not having the free content that a new copy had.
Right. So here's a five-second explanation for listeners, just really quick. Basically, somebody bought a used game. GameStop didn't tell him that the used game didn't come with the special online content. He pissed off, sued GameStop, right?
That's it.
There we go. Okay.
Don't know if he made any headway with that. Probably not. But so now I noticed that on a lot of their new games, when they're taking reserves, they're giving extra content on top of that content. Like the UFC game has like free fighters. Assassin's Creed have like I think an extra multiplayer map. Just little crap stuff like that. And
so,
it kind of got me thinking.
So this is even extra? Extra?
Yeah. It's like extra, you get it if you reserve the game at GameStop.
But, oh, so now this is, not only is this content that's exclusive for a new purchase, but on top of this now, this is content that is exclusive for a reservation.
Yeah, but just to be clear, this has been going on before the Project $10 where they include little codes, for the most part, right? Because this whole, like, giving extra content to pre-orders at GameStop has been going on for, like, a couple years now, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah, it's been going on for a while. But I think it's kind of crappy that, okay, you spend $60 on a game at GameStop, or you spend $60 on a game anywhere else, but you're going to get less content, and that extra content that you get for free at GameStop, if you bought the game, say, at Best Buy, you'd have to pay more money to get the same content.
Yeah.
And what I thought was really interesting about the whole thing was a lot of publishers have always cried about GameStop hurting their sale of new games, yet here they are, giving GameStop, of all people, exclusive content to get people to buy their games there.
Well, I think that video game corporations, whether they're retail or publishers, complain about profits much like a gangster will complain about profits, if you catch my meaning. Right?
Interesting.
Yeah. So, but one of the interesting things about the whole pre-order thing, reservation thing, is that previously, the stuff that you got extra was like swag. It's like, oh, I got an art book, right? Or, oh, I get a t-shirt. But now, correct me if I'm wrong, Joe, it's at least partially transformed into I'm getting game content that I would otherwise have to pay for.
Yeah, I mean, and it's cool, but I think it's not cool because to me it's like, you know, what if someone didn't know about it? Because not everyone shops at GameStop. And then, like, you know, their buddy comes over and he's like, oh, I bought this at GameStop. And he's like, oh, well, boy, now to get essentially the same new game that you got, I got to spend an extra $5 or $10 that I really shouldn't have to spend.
Yeah. Right, but you, I mean, you know that they're trying to coerce you to pre-order.
Yeah.
That they're doing
everything
they can
and
to get that.
And they know that's the only way they can do it because everybody with a brain knows that if you walk into pretty much any store, you're going to get the copy the day it comes out unless it's a collector's edition.
Right. I mean, if I was GameStop, I would probably try to coerce as many pre-orders as possible because this is basically a guaranteed sale. I know how many of this game to order. I know how many I'll sell, so I can, you know, buy the right amount of games to sell. But as a consumer, I really hate this. I always, always will go against pre-ordering, even if it's to my direct disadvantage, just for the purpose of not supporting them and not making them feel like I'm dependent on them to get whatever, right? So
that's actually the stance I've now taken. I've decided that I'm not pre-ordering anything ever again.
Yes, power to the people. We can defeat them if we work together. Right,
yeah,
Joe?
I just wanted to get that out to everybody that they should stop doing it.
Okay, Colin has something very important to express.
Well, I just wanted to say that I understand, like, if they're going to give you something like a free costume or something like that just to show your support, but stuff like maps or something that changes gameplay, like in Battlefield Bad Company, the first one, didn't you? Or
yeah.
Maybe it was this one. You got, like, a new set of guns if you pre-ordered the game.
Yeah.
And that's a little ridiculous.
Yeah.
Especially when that content comes out, like, for everyone else, and you have to pay for it, and it comes out, like, 4 or 5 months after the product's release.
Right. Oh, speaking of costumes, one thing I completely do not understand, which, by the way, maybe somebody can elucidate me about this. You can buy... Okay, so stuff that you buy on Xbox Live for your avatar, it's like what? It's like $1 or $2, right? Does nothing.
You can get a lightsaber, though.
It's not even... It doesn't do anything. It's not even like in the like in a game it represents some kind of trophy or it does anything functional, right? And it's not even like once in a while. Like they have tons of this stuff.
Did you see they released the Star Wars set today?
I didn't see that one, but I saw like all the new Forza stuff, and I was like, okay, yeah, that's kind of cool. You know, I'll have like a racing helmet, but then like I'm gonna pay a dollar or two for what? Showing other people that my character's wearing a racing helmet.
There is one thing that I like about that though, is if you can unlock, if you can like they did the achievements where you unlock new gear for your avatar and like give it to you for free, and I think that's pretty awesome.
Well, I think if there's a way to get it for free by you know accomplishing something in game, that's cool. I mean, obviously, this whole thing is a big experiment by Microsoft for them to see how much can we goad people into buying this stuff, right? Because this stuff, I mean, it's pure profit. Like, are you kidding me? Like, you're selling a digital helmet for a dollar or two each? Like, what kind of insane profit margin? Like, this probably took an artist maybe, like, 30 minutes to do. Like, how much money are they going to make off of this? Holy smokes.
You know, and one thing, though, that GameStop is doing that I guess makes the whole their whole thing kind of redeeming a little bit is, I guess, with the new Red Dead Redemption game, when they first started taking pre-orders and they were deciding what content they were going to dish out, they actually, I guess, had a poll on their websites, and they had three choices that people could vote on to decide what content would be free.
Right, kind of like picking the next Mountain Dew.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess, you know, you can pick your poison. I still think it's lame, but I guess at least you're getting a little bit of a choice.
Okay, Joe, I have one final question for you.
Yes, sir.
Have you played Split Second?
I have not, because I don't play a lot of racing games.
Okay, so, all right.
Should I play it?
Well, listen to us chat about it and then decide.
All right,
dude, thanks for the call.
Bye, Joe.
All right, man, take care. Later, guys.
All right, so, yeah, the last game we wanted to talk about in this now one-half-hour-long what-have-you-been-playing-lately mega segment is Split Second. Now, Split Second is developed by BlackRock Studio, which I think they made Fuel, right?
I think so. They did MotoGP 07, right?
Yeah, well, that was the previous incarnation of the studio. But as BlackRock, I think it was Fuel. Like, all of those one-word games always confuse me.
Dirt.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the popular thing as one word games. But I guess they're breaking out with Split Second, right? Because that's two words. So Split Second was, I don't know what to say. In a way, the games that the studio does, and ironically enough, this is an offshoot of Climax in England.
Yeah.
Not the Japanese Climax, England Climax. And these guys are incredible at making very polished, well-presented games. It looks beautiful. It looks great. When it comes down to the mechanics of the game, I feel like I'm playing a pile of garbage. That's the most direct way I can express
All right. So the big gimmick in the game is that you can blow up part of the field and it'll create some obstacles to other people and make new tracks. And like you can take shortcuts.
Conceptually, I think this is a really cool idea. Basically, like you said, in a nutshell, it's you do things to power up this meter, right? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, you're drafting or you're drifting and this meter goes up. And once this meter has gone up adequately, then you can release these things that will basically thwart, you know, make your opponents crash or blow up or whatever, right? Now, in other games up till now, like Wipeout, it was weapons. You know,
yeah.
Okay, I got the weapon, I shoot the weapon, I blow up the guy in front of me.
The kind of kart racer kind of feel where you have the weapons,
right,
power-ups,
those
everything
things,
like that.
Right?
Yeah.
So they kind of turn this on its head, and all of these things are now in the environment.
Yeah.
Right? Which is cool, but there's a couple of not-so-cool things about it, which we'll get to when we come back after the break.
Bye, guys.
That's right, guys. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio, and we're talking about Split Second, right? So the demo came out on Xbox 360 recently. Now, here's the thing that I don't like about Split Second. There's a couple things. One of them is I don't know. They've apparently decided that if the camera, and Split Second is a racing game, the camera that sits behind your car, you know, in most games, it stays still for the most part.
Oh, God.
Right? Apparently, they decided this is not exciting enough. In terms, now, obviously, it doesn't stay still. It stays still relative to your car, right?
Is it as bad as, like, the GTA flying camera? Like, the cinematic camera?
Yeah.
That was horrible.
Yeah, I don't think it's quite like that, but basically, it's like it's on a continuous, like, rumbling, vibration, jittering kind of thing, right? Which, I don't know. I mean, I guess they were looking for some kind of feel to the game, and that's why they did that. But it completely, not only does it completely destroy any sense of speed, in my opinion, but it just makes it look like there's something wrong. You know, instead of, like, it's just, like, why is the camera, I don't know why the camera, is there an earthquake all the time? I don't know what's going on here.
You can make earthquakes, right?
I mean, I don't know. I haven't made an earthquake, but maybe you can in the game, right? So the hook of this game is that, you know, you get these power-ups, but these power-ups, instead of directly firing something to destroy your enemy, which, you know, are your fellow racers in the race, it actually causes something in the environment to F your opponents up. And so here's the kind of tricky thing, right, is that in order for this to work, basically, you can only do things when the car's ahead of you. One, like, they have to be close enough to you, right? Because if you have to be able to see them more or less.
Yeah.
And two, they have to be in a specific designated zone of something bad might happen here, right? So it's kind of like, you know, like a carnival ride in that way. Right. So if, for example, you go under the tunnel, you know, there's a specific tunnel that if you go under it, right, now there's certain hot spots there that when your opponents are traveling under those hot spots, right, or on those hot spots, and you have the specific power that you need and you press the button, right, it triggers this explosion that, you know, that, I don't know, like throws cars perpendicular to the track on, and there's fire and exploding and they get hit by the cars, and that's how you blow them up and, you know, you delay them so you can pass them. Right. And if you're not careful, you can screw yourself up, too.
Yeah.
You know what? All this stuff sounds really great. You know,
it sounds pretty gimmicky.
Visually, very impressive. To me, the gimmicky part is that there feels like there's absolutely no precision in control. And it's not just with activating or not activating these obstacles that run into your enemies. It's with the actual handling of the vehicle itself. And these guys, it's so funny because these same flaws and these same strengths are also in their previous game. I think it was Fuel. I'm pretty sure it was, but you should look that up.
Looking it up.
Yes. Okay. Awesome. So, because in that game, right, here's the funny thing, right? In that game, and in this game too, there's no speedometer, right? And they will tell you that there's no speedometer because they don't think it's important for you to know your exact speed, which is true in a game like this. However, yeah, go ahead.
Fuel was Codemasters.
Yeah, that's right. That wasn't Fuel. So what was the other one?
I'm looking at it right now. Blackrock Studios.
Look up Blackrock Studios. Yeah, Fuel was this. Fuel was
Pure.
That open world game.
Pure.
Okay, so Fuel and Pure. Okay, so Pure is the one we're talking about. So yeah, so the funny thing about Pure is, right, there's no speedometer. I think the real reason why they didn't have a speedometer in that game is because they're doing shenanigans to your speed in order to accomplish other things while you're racing, right? In other words, they're artificially manipulating your speed, and they're not showing the speedometer in order to obfuscate that to you.
Ah.
Other tricks that they do in that game, which they might even do in this one, but I haven't actually felt it directly, is they actually had these kind of invisible magnets pull you to one part of the course or another when you were either on a tight turn or you were in a fork in the road. If you guys think this is some weird stuff I'm talking about, go play Pure, drive to a part of the track where there's a fork in the road, try to drive in the middle of the fork, and you'll feel that there's something pulling you to either end, right? It's really, really disconcerting. It seems like their philosophy is all about the looks of stuff, presentation about stuff, I guess accessibility in terms of if they're doing all these manipulations to you to help you get around the course or whatever, then it's more accessible. But at the same time, it takes away this feeling that I have direct control.
Yeah.
And so I lost this feeling of direct control in split second, and that's my main criticism of the game.
Now, just to go back to the explodey parts where it makes the track go all crazy, does that system work? Or, like, does it feel like – how many maps are in the demo? Like, how many tracks are in the demo?
No, well, the demo is only one, obviously.
It's only one? Yeah. Yeah.
So you can't get a really strong feeling for it.
I'm going to need to go buy this game now, because I just want to know, like, how – or rent it or something, because I just want to know how many tracks there are and if those explosions are just going to get really gimmicky, because how many maps could they possibly have?
Right. Well, certainly, because they're – this is a big production type of thing, right?
Yeah.
They can't make as many as they would otherwise if they – If those types of effects demanded, you know, a lot less production time. So, I don't know. Obviously, a lot of the weight and value of that game depends on the variety and the interest of these things.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people have told me that, you know, the later ones are just, like, totally crazy off-the-wall banana stuff. So maybe that's true, right? But once again, yeah, it's I don't know. It's kind of gimmicky. I prefer to have more control in my game, but let's move on from that.
And we're done with games that we've been playing.
That's okay. So we've done with that. So there's a lot of cool games coming out. So that's my excuse. It's a good one. So let's see. What else have we got today? By the way, if anyone wants to call in, if you're here, you've got about 20 minutes. If you're here, I mean, listening live, you can call us at 866-536-1100.
And please go to the chat room. I'm in there right now.
Yes, we have a chat room at chatterboxers.com. You can go there. You can chat live. You can contribute to the show. It's really awesome. We do it every show. So, let's see. We've got a couple of stories, right? What do we want to talk about first? Let's talk about... You know what? Let's talk about this... Oh, man. What was it called?
The Humble Indie Bundle?
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking. See, this is why you're here. This is why we pay you the big bucks, Colin. So... We've touched on this before, right? The latest story about this, and this is really interesting, is about the fact that when they've released this, right, they said, okay, you can pay whatever you want. You can pay one penny for all these games.
Yeah.
Right? And even still, they found out that a lot of people were pirating the game, right? Which, to me, says that people who pirate games probably wouldn't buy the game anyway.
Right.
Right? Which is also funny because most studies about this topic seem to report that, oh, you know, there's if 1,000 copies of the game are pirated, that's 1,000 lost sales, right? Now, it's funny because there's a group called Reflexive Games that did another study. They did a series of experiments, and they actually discovered that for about every 1,000 copies that they blocked, they only actually made one extra sale. So that's like what? That's like 0.1%.
Yeah.
Right? Well, so I've always thought that, you know, it was a small number like this, right? But I think the issue is a little bit more complex than this. There's a little more subtlety here, right? Because especially now in light of, Epic has been in the news lately, right, about, oh, you know, we make mostly, pretty much exclusively, console games now. Before, they were pretty much exclusively PC games,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, well, like, their big shift was Gears of War when they started focusing on the 360 and kind of,
right,
like...
that has a lot to do with it. And one of the main reasons, as, you know, the president, Dr. Michael Capps, says, is that there's a lot of piracy on the PC, so they can't make as much money. So the funny thing is that, yeah, most pirators, right... do it out of ease of use, right? Because it's even if you have to pay a penny, right, it's still easier just to click a button, which is it's almost like what you have to do. I mean, like, that's, I think, a fair representation
of what
it takes
to pirate.
Well,
it's like you can just subscribe to RSS feeds, and you're just getting games in your queue all the time.
Right. I mean, you just find the torrent, and you get it.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get the torrent client, and then, I mean, it's like, it's so easy. It's even easier than actually just going through a purchase process.
Yeah.
Even if the purchase is 1 cent. So here's the thing that's happened, though, right? And on the PC market, I think that the PC market has actually dwindled, right? Just in general, not just for Epic's products or not Epic's products, but just in general, and that's what Epic has observed, right? Because it's so easy to pirate. And consoles make more money because it's harder to pirate, right?
Right.
Yet at the same time, everybody who pirates, or most people who pirate, don't really buy the game anyway. So, I don't know. There's some kind of subtlety there going on that...
Well, there's a lot of reasons to blame why the PC market's dwindled, especially with the like how powerful that consoles have gotten nowadays, especially with that internet connectivity, that modular building.
So you think that there's more reasons beyond just the ease
just,
of pirating?
Yeah, definitely. I think
okay.
that...
Well, like, go ahead.
Well, I think that with a console, you don't have to install a game except for if you're on the PS3, but even then, it's really simple for you to like plug and play. Just put it in there and you're ready to go. You now have like great online capability, especially with the 360. You have cheaper game. Well, you have a really cheap market of games with the arcade stuff going on. I think there's a lot of reasons why the PC, and then it's easier for kids to get into like a console game versus like a PC game.
Yeah, that's true. There's definitely an accessibility issue, right?
Right.
And I wouldn't even classify it as kids, right? Because it's funny because everybody falls into that trap, right? Like everybody says, oh, it's easier for kids, right? But I mean, like, come on, like really, like there's lots of adults,
yeah,
who do not know how to use these types of devices as well as kids do.
Well, with stuff like Steam and other like services that are making it easier, maybe the PC is going to pick back up, and really cheap games like the Humble Indie Bundle could help.
Maybe,
stuff.
Maybe. So that's the music again. When we come back, Colin will tell us about a little thing called Alice. We have some listener mail from a guy named Pen15, and we will be back.
See you in a sec.
In a jiffy.
Welcome back to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name is Colin.
I'm still Ara.
And he's still Ara. And
who's our wonderful sponsor?
UAT, the University of Advancing Technology.
That's right. You can go to uat.edu and find out all about making games and all that cool stuff.
Including programming.
Including programming. So, we're going to talk about two things this segment. We have some mail that we'll get to in the second half of the segment. Yes, that's the sound of the mail. So we want to spend a few minutes, Colin. Am I right in ascertaining that you are perhaps an aspiring programmer?
You would be right on that.
Okay, I'm totally right. That's awesome. So I heard that you are making some inroads into trying to teach yourself programming.
Yeah, I'm trying to learn how to use Python.
Python. Ooh, that's pretty hardcore. That's cool.
I heard it was the easiest. Like versus C++, I heard Python was the way to go.
Yeah, well, I think Python's a little annoying, but I guess, like, structurally it's simpler.
Yeah.
So we're going to attempt to keep this marginally related to video games, right? But you had some experience with something called Alice.
Yes.
And this is part of your attempts at, or I should say, investigations into learning programming because you don't want to write spreadsheet software, you want to make games, don't you?
Exactly.
That's right. Okay. So now you don't have formal experience or training in programming, right? So you're just like trying to teach yourself this whole new language from the ground up, just in programming in general. Like you don't have, am I correct in saying you don't have a lot of experience doing programming?
Nope. I'm an English major.
Okay. So you're an English major. Okay. So this is great. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your experience with Alice and maybe some of these other things and what it's been like?
All right. So Alice is an innovative 3D programming environment that lets you create an animation for telling a story. It's released by Carnegie Mellon University as a free tool for kids to learn how to program. And I was like, why not? I'll just try it. I'll see what I can do. So I started playing around with it. And the way they set up the tutorial to learn how to do it is kind of like a game on how you learn things. But it's like you can follow the tutorial or you can just open up their little scenarios and just play around with it.
Is it like Alice in Wonderland?
That's what the icon is.
Okay, the icon is like that, but not the program.
No, they have a bunch of, like, the first one was like you played around with a figure skater, and you made her do stuff crazy. And you kind of make a little movie out of it. But it's interesting the way that it presents a tutorial for you to play with and kind of makes the scenario, and then you make it and play with it yourself. But it's also got, like, an open-ended feature where it's got a bunch of extra animations you can just add in and do crazy stuff. Like, I made the lady, the little figure skater, like, do backflips, look at me, do all this creepy stuff, make her say things. And it was pretty fun, except for the program just runs so slow. it just doesn't work right. I don't know if my computer is slow or what the problem is.
You've been running that on your trash AD?
Yes. Exactly. With the one mouse
button. That's a really old reference that probably nobody listening will get, but one person will, and it's worth it for them.
Yeah, so I really like the program. I just wish that it was a little bit more user-friendly with its tutorial, too, because it's got, like, crazy boxes that don't look too hot. The whole program looks good except for the tutorial overlay it's got going on.
Now, is it just for creating animations, or what do you know about the breadth of what you can do with this tool?
As you work towards later in the tutorials, like, I've only done the first two before it kind of, like, crashed on me, and I was like, all right, I'm giving up on you. But according to what I know, you'll eventually be able to kind of like control the characters and make them like in real time, like kind of like a game.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm going to stick with it and see what I can really learn. But like it also kind of spits out the program. It shows you like how a programming language is formed. You kind of give it crazy commands. It's not like any other real programming language, but it gives you like the mindset. It sets the base grounds of how these commands all go together.
Right. So it's a completely visual system, right?
Yes.
So you don't have to do any typing in order to get things to happen, right?
Right.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. So let's just spend like another minute or two on this, and then we'll go on to the letter. What I'm really curious to know about, you know, since, you know, I have a background in computer science, right? That's what I went to school for. But very quickly I decided that that's not what I want to do because I didn't think that I was best at that, right?
Right.
So I know probably as much as any programmer knows, and maybe even a little more because I think it's harder for me than a lot of programmers, how hard programming actually is. But I want to hear from you, what's it been like, your excursions into programming land as of late?
It's been really, really hard. Learning how to use, like, just learning how to even set up your workspace and, like, try to figure everything out and, like, all different commands. But it's been a lot of fun just playing with it and trying to, like, make new stuff happen, especially with Python, because it's been like everything just keeps failing on me, and I'm like, what am I doing wrong?
Right.
But I'm going to stick with it and just see what I can get out of it, because I've only been going at it for 2 weeks now, so
yeah,
that's
good. You should definitely stick with it, because things that seem totally impossible now, maybe next year will be absolutely trivial for you.
And I can make games.
And you can totally make games. And really, I mean, if somebody is interested in making games, I would recommend to them, don't do what I did. If you learned how to program, that gives you an enormous amount of power. I know how to program, but I'm not experienced enough in it for it to be my expertise. So anyway, enough about that. We've got some listener mail. Okay, enough of that. All right, take it out. All right. Okay. I was, like, totally elated for, like, 3 seconds, and then, okay, so you've got the letter.
I do.
On you.
Pen15.
So our good friend Pen15, an avid listener, I don't have it in front of me, so I'm just going to paraphrase, and we'll see how far this discussion takes us. So Pen wrote to us, and he wanted to ask me, or he wanted to ask us to talk about basically fighting game systems, specifically Street Fighter type systems versus something that they do in, let's say, like Soul Calibur.
Which I love.
Which you love, which is great because I love and I prefer a Street Fighter style system. Mr. Pen15 does not, and you do not.
Pen15's awesome.
Right. So, okay.
All right. So what he's arguing about is its complexity, and I think that Soul Calibur 2 is like the pinnacle of fighting games. I love Soul Calibur 2.
Okay, so what makes that, right, over everything else? What's the crucial factor there that actually makes it the pinnacle? Is it the extra large boobs in the last iteration, or what?
Well, I think that you can take Soul Calibur 2 and put it in front of someone who's never played the game, never played a fighting game before in their life, and they can pick it up and be semi-competent with it, but still have this deep complexity. Like, even doing a Hadouken in a Street Fighter 2 is going to be pretty hard for someone who's never played a fighting game before.
I absolutely agree with that. And the interesting thing, now Pen15's argument, and you have it in front of you, so you tell me if this is accurate, and he'll probably write us later if he disagrees, is that in Street Fighter, in order to do the advanced moves, it requires a very, very high level of skill. You have to put in inputs in a very specific way, or you can't do them. Right, and in a game like Soul Calibur, basically mashing buttons will still result in some of those special moves.
Right.
Right? And in that way, it's more accessible. And I do agree that, you know what, Soul Calibur in general, Eidruggi is a more accessible game. But I would contend that accessibility just by itself, depending on what the product is not necessarily strictly better.
Yeah, I understand that.
Now, another one of Penn's criticisms is that all the characters in Street Fighter had a different moveset, very different moveset. If you learn one character, right, that doesn't necessarily mean you can play another one. And the inputs, now there's some inputs that are shared, right? The grammar of inputs varies a lot between characters. In a game like Soul Calibur, the grammar of inputs is basically consistent, right? If you can use one character, you can use another.
Yeah, if you push X, he'll block.
Right. So, but we're not just talking about block, because blocking's the same in all characters in Street Fighter 2, right? Even the more advanced moves, it uses a consistent grammar between characters. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay, so there we go. So his argument is, okay, well, Soul Calibur is better because of that, right? I wouldn't say that one's necessarily better than the other. Now, he thinks Street Fighter is backwards because you can't learn all the characters at once. He thinks that it's an unnecessary obfuscation of actually learning the grammar and the interface and the dynamics of gameplay. What I would argue is that there's actually value in making it a completely different experience to learn each character and having to learn a different set of skills to be able to move each character. I think that, you know, as contrived as it is, right, to have different inputs do different things for different characters, I mean, you could say that the whole game, both games are a complete contrivance anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I still think that it just seems like the way that Street Fighter 2 is set up is just way more, or any Street Fighter game is just way more complicated than...
It is more complicated,
but,
right?
But Soul Calibur still allows you to have that complexity through its... It's got systems that are similar to all characters, like that block move where you, like, the block break where you can kind of push it away, and then the same jumping mechanics, and there's three models of character in the game.
Yeah, maybe so.
I'm just going to have to take it out of Soul Calibur.
Yeah, I mean, one man's contrivance is, you know, another man's, something really good. So.
All right, well, I guess that means it's the end of the show. We can hear the music.
Yeah, we still got a couple seconds.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, what I would say about Street Fighter is that the highest level play doesn't necessarily involve making your ability to do the best moves. There's a lot of poking. There's a lot of positioning back and forth. And that's just basic moves.
Yeah. So.
Anyway, that's it, guys. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
Bye.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.